This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to PM. I'm David Lipson. Major changes to the testing regime as Omicron surges. PCR tests no longer required to confirm a positive result. We hear from the loved ones of aged care residents about lockdowns, staffing shortages and inadequate access to tests.
The email that I've been dreading, that a staff member had tested positive over that Christmas period, now they're back in lockdown, and certainly when Mum's in isolation in her room, you can just hear the loneliness. And she said to me yesterday, "I just wished I could die." No one wants to hear their parents say that.
Also, how did Novak Djokovic get a COVID-19 vaccination exemption to play at the Australian Open? Thanks for your company. The near collapse of the nation's ability to adequately test for COVID-19 in the community as infections from the Omicron strain continue to skyrocket has led to another major policy shift. COVID testing requirements have been slashed by National Cabinet in an effort to ease pressure on the strained testing regime. People with a positive rapid antigen test will no longer be required to get a PCR test as confirmation. Regular testing for truck drivers has been scrapped, and international arrivals will no longer be required to get multiple tests. National Cabinet's also agreed to provide up to 10 discounted rapid antigen tests for concession card holders over the next 3 months. Political reporter Claudia Long joins me now from our Parliament House Bureau. Claudia, who will be able to get those rapid tests for free?
Well, David, those with a pension concession card, those with a Commonwealth Seniors Health Card and healthcare card holders, among others, including those on low-income cards and DVA gold or white cards, will be on that list. So they'll be eligible for 10 free rapid antigen tests over the next 3 months in a bid to make sure that people in vulnerable communities, in vulnerable groups, get those tests that have been proving so incredibly hard to find around the country at the moment, with many reports of not only them selling out as soon as they get to pharmacies and suppliers, but with rampant price gouging apparently happening across the country as well. Now, this is all part of a bid by National Cabinet to slash back those COVID testing requirements, like you said, in an effort to ease pressure on the incredibly strained testing system. Now, the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, says that tension, as he calls it, in supply for those tests will continue for the next little while. He estimates for the next fortnight. And also, in another bid to, I guess, take that pressure off, if you have a positive rapid antigen test at home, you will no longer be required to get a PCR test at a drive-through clinic or other clinic as proof of that result. That's no longer going to be needed, along with those changes to tests for truck drivers and international arrivals no longer being required to get multiple tests either. Now, here's the Prime Minister a short time ago explaining how those 10 free tests for concession card holders are going to work.
And they will be made available through the pharmacy network. There will be a maximum of 10 tests that will be provided on a concessional basis over those 3 months. If you are symptomatic or a close contact and you're a concession card holder, do not go to the pharmacy to get your test. Go to the testing centre. We don't want people who are symptomatic or who are close contacts and may be carrying the virus going into pharmacies.
That's the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. And Claudia, we know that pressure on our hospital systems is increasing. The New South Wales Premier today has admitted that there is substantial pressure on the hospitals in New South Wales. We're seeing the same thing in other states too. What have we heard from the Prime Minister about the state of our health and hospital systems?
Well, he says one of the key concerns is staffing issues, perhaps rather than those high numbers of people with previous variants being admitted to ICU. He says we're not seeing that at this stage, but we'll come back to that in a moment, because we know today that the Prime Minister took a proposal to National Cabinet to potentially redefine who counts as a hospitalised case of COVID. Now, he didn't get that in the end. So what that redefinition would have been is differentiating differentiating between those who have gone to hospital because of COVID symptoms and those who have gone for other issues and happen to have COVID at the same time. So what National Cabinet has agreed is that it's important for the public to understand the difference between those two things. But ultimately, because of the strain the healthcare system is under at the moment, that kind of administrative process that hospitals would need to undertake to log those kind of differences would be unreasonable at this stage. But he says they're going to be putting in place a, quote, qualitative way of getting a better understanding of those numbers. Here's the Prime Minister addressing some of those issues with the hospital system.
Hospital system challenges relate more particularly to continue to gain access to workforce. That is the key constraint on our hospital system at present, and that relates to a set of rules around testing arrangements and furloughing arrangements and isolation arrangements. And we discussed those at length today as we looked at both the demand issues that relate to testing as well as the supply issues.
That's the Prime Minister Scott Morrison speaking in Canberra after National Cabinet. Our reporter Claudia Long in Canberra too. The announcement that a PCR test will no longer be required to confirm a COVID infection if a rapid antigen test turns up positive will be welcome news for many who've been stuck in snaking queues for a laboratory confirmed test. As the Prime Minister outlined, it's not about counting case numbers. It's about connecting people to care, which, as we've heard on this program this last week, hasn't been happening. The policy shift may come as a relief as well for thousands of residents of aged care facilities who've been locked down, with staff and residents unable to return to work because they've been unable to confirm or annul a positive rapid test. Yet again, it's a lonely and frightening time in aged care as COVID starts to seep in again. We've spoken to several families worried about their loved ones who are again at the sharp end of this pandemic and being cut off from human contact in an effort to keep them safe.
My name's Val Schaefer and I live in Taree. However, my mother, Annette Schaefer, is a resident at Autumn Lodge Aged Care Facility in Armidale and she's 82 years old. I received an email on Monday the 27th of December, just after Christmas. It's the email that I've been dreading receiving, but received one to say that a staff member had at the facility had tested positive over that Christmas period and that Autumn Lodge Aged Care in Armidale had to go into lockdown out of necessity, showing all, you know, precautions that they could. Unfortunately, since that email, they have been unable to get any access to proper PCR, accurate PCR pathology testing. Unfortunately, talking to my mother on the phone last week, she had a runny nose and a sore throat. So I immediately rang the RN on duty at Autumn Lodge to let them know that my mum was displaying some symptoms. And they then put my mother into further isolation on top of the facility-wide lockdown. The mum was in total isolation in her room. Thankfully, she's now reporting that the sore throat has disappeared. She's still got a stuffy nose. My mum actually was fortunate to have received the booster dose, her third dose, in November. So I'm so thankful for that. Mm. But there's been no update from the CEO of Autumn Lodge since New Year's Eve. It's just such an incredibly worrying time, so frustrating. And these residents are just sitting there. So what are we up to now? About 10 days? And they can't even get access to proper PCR testing.
How is your mum doing?
Just dreadfully lonely. And you can hear it in her voice. Here we go again. There, before Christmas, in that November-December period, you could hear delight and enthusiasm in her voice again. All her social activities were starting to come back. And since that time, post-Christmas, now they're back in lockdown, and certainly when Mum's in isolation in her room, you can just hear the loneliness. And she says that. And she said to me yesterday, I just wished I could die.
I'm
and
so
no
sorry.
Son or daughter wants to hear that. No one wants to hear their parents say that. But here we are again.
I'm Tammy and I'm from Canberra.
Just run us through what's happened to your father-in-law.
He's turning 101 on Friday. Last year he was still at home, living at home. He's now living in an aged care residence. They have gone into lockdown today because they've got a staff member with a reported case, it means that two, that we won't be able to talk over a video link because he doesn't have his own mobile phone. My partner will phone and just have a normal phone conversation with him. But I guess we're just really worried about what that means and how things will go from here and when he'll be allowed to have visitors again. Interaction is so important each day. You know, he's, as I said, he's 101. He's fairly frail now. And so we just know that each moment and each day is really precious. We want to see him, but at the same time, we need to keep him safe as well, because he is obviously in the most vulnerable category. You know, we'd hate for him to get COVID. I mean, there'd be nothing worse, really.
But my name is Hani Iskander. I live in Lane Cove, Sydney. And my mum is 86 years of age, and she has suffered from Parkinson's for quite a few years. She's now late stage, meaning she's in a wheelchair, unable to move by herself, and also early dementia, so she cannot remember things easily. She has been in aged care or a nursing home at North Tarramurra, and the COVID situation has been very troubling. And during lockdown, in the initial lockdown, families could not visit. They can do what's called a window visit. They stand outside the glass wall and talk to their relatives through it. And now she's in a second lockdown. I received a call from the facility saying that unfortunately one of the staff has tested positive. So a few days later, I called and I said, by the way, how are we doing with the PCR? And they said, oh, the first PCR is negative. And then the RN who spoke to me, she said, but unfortunately the government has stopped us getting the second PCR test done for the residents. And I said, what does that mean? And she said, well, we have to send the PCRs to a pathology, to the lab, and they've told us they will not accept any samples or any tests from us. My mother is still negative, and I haven't heard of anyone else being positive, which is good news. The sad thing about it, of course, is I have a brother and a sister, and we're constantly calling our mother because she's moved into an emotional and mental sort of depressive mode.
It's fine. Take your time.
So, because of her condition, she can't remember when we spoke to her last. So, if I spoke to her in the morning, and my sister speaks to her a few hours later, she can't remember that I did talk to her and said, I'm expecting everybody else is in the same boat, of course. So she keeps calling my sister to say that she wants to go shopping or she wants to come out and visit her and all sorts of other sort of related heartbreaking messages. So that's the situation we're in, and I'm pretty sure that hundreds if not thousands of other people, families are in.
That's Hani Iskander, just one of the loved ones we heard from today, loved ones of frail and elderly citizens who are once again in a terrible situation. If you do want to visit a family member in aged care, you'll probably need a rapid test. The Prime Minister says there's 200 million of them on the way in the coming weeks, but they're most certainly not here now. Some pharmacies are reporting the few testing kits they can procure are barely unloaded from the truck before they're snapped up and sold out. Reporter David Taylor has more.
Rapid antigen tests are now worth their weight in gold.
We had to go up to the chemists multiple times trying to line it up with delivery times because they'd get a delivery and, of course, they'd all go.
Melbourne-based Liz Palmer needed test kits for her husband, who was flying interstate for work. She says the kits at her local pharmacy never make it to the shelves.
So I think it's more just chance that you're there at the time and then they're just gone. I don't know how much stock they're getting in.
The massive shift in demand follows a change in policy by state government border entry requirements, from negative PCR tests to RATs. The demand is so high, some retailers have turned to food delivery apps and online sales to sell the tests. That's how Marco Monti got his hands on 20 RATs. Shopping around online, he couldn't find a test he was confident would do the job until he eventually struck gold, so to speak.
Logged back in the next day, and once again there was one of the high-quality rapid antigen tests available, and that was $440 odd for a pack of 20. So I purchased that straight away.
Melbourne software developer Matt Haywood decided to use his holidays to create the website Find a Rat to help people find tests. That's how this Lane Cove rat chaser found her kits.
This is like the toilet paper thing all over again. But yeah, it is unfortunate that they're so expensive, so not available to everyone.
But huge queues at servos and roadside restaurants are making this rat race one of a kind.
I live in Cammeray, so I've been to one stop already at Chatswood and then now here to Hunters Hill. I called ahead, but they couldn't obviously put them aside. But it's creating an amazing frenzy and it's probably not good for all of our health.
Yes, I have spent the last 3 hours calling and driving halfway around Sydney and I managed to find it here. It's like the amazing race.
Sydney-based medical supplies importer and wholesaler Scott Huntsman claims he's been able to order up to 100 million tests. He says some retailers are driving up demand by drip-feeding the tests onto shelves to create the illusion that they're in short supply.
People that have come to us saying that they've delivered X amount to this store and that store has not released all of the stock onto the shelves. Generally in stores, I know that Coles has ample stock. Woolworths and Officeworks have stock as well. So I haven't really had any issues in getting any stock at all.
So you really don't think there is a shortage at all of rapid antigen?
No, I don't think that there's a shortage of rapid antigen tests, but I know that there is issues in terms of freight bringing it into the country. So there is issues around airspace, trying to get it onto a plane and get it into the country at the moment.
That's wholesaler Scott Huntsman with our business reporter David Taylor. Tennis star Novak Djokovic's eligibility to compete at the Australian Open has been thrown into question after he was granted an exemption from vaccine rules allowing him to enter the country. The acting Australian Border Force Commissioner is examining an issue that's arisen with the tennis star's Australian travel declaration. Here's Nell Whitehead.
Novak Djokovic is turning upsetting Australians into its own kind of sport. He caused outrage at last year's Australian Open when he lobbied to get players out of hotel quarantine. A year on and he's triggered uproar again, this time over the fact that he's been allowed to travel to Melbourne to play in the tournament.
I'm not a very big tennis fan, but it doesn't matter what sport you're in. It's like everybody's got to go by the rules.
Why is there one rule for the majority of us and another rule for the minority? And the minority always seem to win. I'm over it.
Well, I think it's bloody wrong, to tell you the truth. Because everyone else has got to do the righty, why can't he? Yeah, just because he's a famous sportsman, you know, he should abide the rules like everyone else has to.
Djokovic has never confirmed whether he's had the vaccine, but he said last year that he was opposed to vaccination and he dropped out of the ATP tournament in Sydney. Officials say, though, that he qualifies for a legitimate exemption, but the details of that are private. Here's Tennis Australia's chief executive, Craig Tiley.
It's very clear on what conditions you would receive an exemption on. One of them is obviously having an adverse response to any kind of vaccine and having something like an anaphylactic response. Another one is if you've just had major surgery and may or may not be suffering from myocarditis. And another one is you're a recovered case. In other words, you've had evidence of COVID and certified evidence of COVID over the past 6 months.
He says the Serbian player was granted permission to enter Australia after an anonymised review by two independent panels. Officials say that process was rigorous and Djokovic was one of just a handful of people granted an exemption for the tournament from 26 applicants. Jala Pulford, Victoria's acting sports minister, insists no rules are being bent.
I want to recognise and acknowledge that this outcome is something that many in the Victorian community will find frustrating, but I want to make absolutely clear that no one is or will be receiving special treatment because of who they are or what they have achieved professionally.
There are still questions about whether the exemption could be overturned. Home Affairs Minister Karen Andrews says that all individuals entering Australia must comply with strict border rules, and that while Tennis Australia can permit a non-vaccinated player to compete, it's the Commonwealth government that will enforce border requirements. It's not the first time Australia has been seen to give special treatment to the rich and famous. When thousands of people were cut off from friends and family over the past couple of years, celebrities arrived here in droves. Jane Williams is a public health ethics researcher at the University of Sydney. She says Djokovic isn't a risk to the community.
But while I don't think he's a risk, I think that there is a risk, I guess, in having rules that are different for some people than others, or that are perceived to be different for some people and others, and particularly if those people are like the rich and famous. Firstly, people can think that if not everybody has to follow them, then they are unimportant for some reason. And the second is that they can think that the rule is unfair or unfairly applied, which might sound a bit obvious, but both of those things can be harmful because they can both undermine trust.
But for tennis fans, it's a landmark moment to watch the world number one try and claim a record 21st Grand Slam title and become the greatest player in history. Louise Plemming is a former pro tennis player and commentator.
I think it's really exciting that the defending champion is coming back to try to defend his title. And I think there's a lot riding on this for Novak. Obviously, he wants to go down in history. He wants to get that 21st Grand Slam and be bigger and better than Roger and Rafa.
That's Louise Plemming, a former professional tennis player and commentator, and that report was from Nell Whitehead, with additional reporting from Isabel Massali. You're listening to PM on Radio on the ABC Listen app and via podcast. I'm David Lipson. Well, battling to contain the spreading COVID outbreak at the epicentre of the Northern Territory's bush outbreak, but the town of Tennant Creek is also struggling to address one of the NT's worst youth crime rates. Regular break-ins to houses and businesses are angering members of the community and making Indigenous leaders worry their teenagers are becoming a lost generation. So a group of the town's community leaders are trying to help tackle the problems with their own volunteer initiative. Here's Jane Barden.
It's 9 o'clock on a dark, moonless night. Tennant Creek community leader Linda Turner and four other Indigenous grandmothers are setting up their camp chairs outside the town's 24-hour BP petrol station on the Stuart Highway. It's a nightly part vigil, part patrol they've been holding for almost a year.
The reason why we come out is there's lots of young kids that walk the streets at night in Tennant Creek up until 5 o'clock in the morning. But mainly we were concerned about this complex here. There was a lot of stealing going on. People's cars, windscreen smashed, rocks been thrown.
Tennant Creek has the highest rates of drinking and some of the highest rates of alcohol-fuelled violence in the Northern Territory. The grandmothers worry more and more young people are disengaged from education, running amok and getting ensnared in the justice system, and that many try to deal with the hurt caused by seeing adults drinking, fighting and not keeping enough money in the house for food by becoming addicted to substances themselves. And so during the night they approach roaming kids and send them home or contact other services, including the town's Aboriginal Night Patrol or the police.
When you engage with some of the kids who are roaming around the streets at night, what have they said about why they've been out so late?
A lot of them, nothing to do. And some legitimately, they're drinking at home or I'm locked out. But they also can't pull all over our eyes because we know who they are and what families they come from. So we know if they're telling us, lies.
The grandmothers are particularly protecting the garage and the town's only supermarket on this site because they're both 50% owned by the local Aboriginal Jalalakari Council, and the supermarket was burned down by youths on its former site last year.
So we had an interest because it's Aboriginal money. You know, we're trying to do this and have businesses to secure the future for our young people.
And what have you noticed the results of being here?
Kids not hanging around the streets. The trucks, as you can hear and see, the trucks are coming back again because one stage trucks were told not to come to Tennant to fuel up, instead go to Three Ways.
The companies were saying don't stop in Tennant.
Yes, and that was a big concern, made us feel no good about that.
Another founding member of the group, Deb King, says they're trying to educate roaming kids.
They thought they could smash a window here every night, and that why people are going to pay for it.
And their parents.
When the kids are really, really bad or they're doing something really bad of a night, we will go and make contact with the families the next day.
What kind of reaction have you got?
Well, half the parents don't even know that they're out. And I'd say to the parents, where was your child at 2:30 or 10 to 3 or whatever? They'd say, oh, they're home in bed. Well, no, I've got 54 cameras around the BP that tells me that they were at the front or they were throwing stones or they were there.
Deb says at first many people were surprised by the granny's patrol or thought they were getting paid. But she says letting the community know they're trying to tackle the town's problems for free has made more people think about what they can do.
A lot of damage was done here for a very long time, and us as a group of volunteers, it's just us community people wanting the community to be safe, to live in.
That's Tennant Creek grandmother Deb Kane. She was speaking to Jane Barden. For many coal mining regions of Australia, there's an ongoing debate about what industry, if any, workers can move into if demand for the resource is wound back as expected. The Lithgow community west of Sydney is one of the places grappling with that exact question. And because it's on the doorstep of the Blue Mountains World Heritage Area, the New South Wales government is hoping that a switch to tourism might be on the cards. Here's Gavin Coote.
Tourism and coal have been a major part of Rob Clough's life. The ex-coal miner owns the aptly named Black Gold Motel. For decades, it's been in the shadows of the recently demolished Willerawang Power Station just outside Lithgow.
Certainly the past has been all about coal and power stations. There was a few tears when it came down because the town is very proud of that history of, you know, providing tens of thousands of jobs over the years.
While coal-related jobs in the Lithgow region have slowly but significantly dwindled, tourism has been growing.
So we'll go on out.
Rob Clough's been in the motel business now for more than 20 years.
So it's changed from what we had as dormitory accommodation and for school groups and four-wheel drive clubs, etc. Then we had a lot of dormitory accommodation with the cabins, and then we developed and we just kept building another block every year and to today where it's quite a big motel and, you know, accommodation. It employs around the 40 staff.
There'll be hundreds more tourism-related jobs, though, if a New South Wales government-led plan gets off the ground. It's earmarked a 30,000-hectare site north of Lithgow for a $50 million ecotourism and adventure park. The site takes in what's known as the Gardens of Stone, known for its sandstone cliffs, pagodas and canyons. And local conservationists like Chris Yonkers are ecstatic about the idea.
This place is really incredible. This is one natural area very close to Sydney that easily accessed by mum, dad, the kids, pensioners, even disabled people. And they can have a wilderness experience second to none.
The money will be used for building rock climbing and canyon walking routes, along with Australia's longest zip line. The state government is predicting it'll lure an extra 200,000 annual visitors to the region and create 200 local jobs. It'd be a significant move away from the region's reliance on coal for jobs, something that locals like Chris Yonkers have been calling for. But there are also reservations about developing a major new tourism hub.
It scares us a little bit that we've worked so hard for something and yet it doesn't appear to be about conservation at all. It's about increased visitor numbers and very high impact recreational activities. That's why it needs to be conserved.
Motel owner and ex-coal miner Rob Clough is also upbeat about the future of tourism in the Lithgow area. and reckons the new ecotourism park will play a big part in that.
When this happens, it will bring a lot of repeat business to the district. We're looking forward to that, and I hope it goes well for them. The government obviously is backing it.
And the big question is, do you think there will be the kind of jobs that people can move into, you know, with people in heavy industry at the moment? Do you think tourism can fill that void in a way?
Not totally, no. I think it's a tangent. We need a variety of industry, and we need the industrial-commercial balance.
As with many other coal mining regions, Lithgow's economic future may be about to be transformed.
That's Gavin Coote, and that's the program for today. Thanks for joining me on PM. I'm David Lipson. We're back tomorrow. We'll bring you updates on ABC throughout the evening. Good night.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.